It's KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. My next guest spent a year with far-right extremist groups in the UK, the US, including here in Seattle. Patrick Hermanson is part of Hope Not Hate, a London-based anti-fascist and anti-racism organization. Hermanson is Swedish, 25 years old, clean-cut, blonde-haired. He pretended to be a student, writing about how right-wing speech was being suppressed in his home country, and that got him access to white supremacist leaders. He was just featured in a New York Times story called Undercover with the Alt-Right. Patrick, welcome to KUOW.
Thanks for having me.
How did your role as an undercover white supremacist bring you to Seattle?
Yeah, that's a great question. Seattle is known as kind of a liberal city, but there actually are some quite extreme white supremacist groups there as well. And when I was in London, I kind of got in touch with one of their leaders, and he invited me.
And we're not just talking about the Inland Northwest. The Northwest Forum website says they're in Seattle. They often meet in and around Seattle.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, yeah. But there's also groups around that don't organize public events.
Yes, the public event you went to was at the home of a prominent local artist, Charles Kraft. Many of our listeners have seen his ceramics, like the famous Hitler teapots that we just always, thought of as mordant irony. What was the home of Charles Kraft like?
Oh yeah, that was definitely not a public event. What can I say about his home? It's on the outskirts of the town, and he makes his pottery there. But it's definitely not only about the irony and the fun, I would say. There are plenty of fascist, old European fascist literature, Nazi symbols, busts of dictators, and quite absurd imagery on the walls.
You went to a number of events in the Seattle area, some large, some smaller social events. Will you describe that?
Yeah, it's all centered on the Northwest Forum, as it's called, which is an ideological conference, you can say, with speakers that they invite from across the US, and then of course me. And then the night before that, I went to a social event just for kind of the core group that organized this and regularly come to this forum.
And what did you learn about the Northwest Forum? What do they want?
The Northwest Forum is modeled after the London Forum, and they're kind of ideologically similar as well. These are white nationalists. Some of them are white supremacists, which go a little bit further. But both of them believe in white people essentially being superior to other people, where the white supremacist goes even further and believe that white people should actually dominate over other people. And they believe that there's a coming race war in the US, that white people are slowly being replaced by immigration. And they want to counter that.
Did the members say anything to you about locating themselves in supposedly liberal Seattle?
Yeah, of course. So I'm from Sweden, so we kind of connected over that then, as I kind of build my fake persona on reacting to liberal Sweden, which I think has a lot in common with what they perceived of Seattle. So they talked about Seattle being very liberal and how unaware people were of reality as they perceive it, how liberals will lead Seattle or the U.S. more largely to destruction.
You know, I interviewed a man who was punched in Seattle while wearing a swastika, and he denied that it was a pro-Nazi act. He said it was just a demonstration for free speech. Did members of this Northwest Forum group tell you that's a tactic of theirs to downplay their views strategically?
Well, many people I've talked to in the alt-right and the more extreme far-right circles talk about how they should present themselves versus what they actually think. And many of those more extreme opinions and ideological features of fascism, like anti-Semitism, they internally discuss how open they should be. So it's definitely something they discuss, yeah.
And specifically portraying themselves falsely to the news media, is that important to them?
Maybe you shouldn't say that, but they like what they call trolling, which is upsetting liberals or the left by offending them. They find that fun. And it's also a strategy to be given room to speak, as they apparently succeeded with in this case.
How does that work?
Well, it's not very complicated. When you say something extremely hateful, you can just backpedal on it and say it was irony or a test of free speech, and then there will be created a discussion around it. That discussion will reach medias, and they will be invited, and they will get attention. So it's a very simple kind of process.
How do you think news media should talk to neo-Nazis, if at all?
No, I don't think you should talk to neo-Nazis at all, because it will always benefit them. So we have the case of you inviting them, but being very critical. They will look bad, they won't be able to answer, and you feel like you've done something good. But what will happen is that their supporters and people that are kind of on their periphery and maybe are leaning to supporting them will feel that they were attacked. You, the elite, well-educated radio people, will have attacked them and treated them unfairly, set them up, and so on. On the other hand, if you treat them well and you ask them kind questions and are soft on them and they come away looking well, yeah, well, then you have supported their message and cause anyway. So there is really no way to invite a neo-Nazi on the radio without somehow supporting their ideas.
So how should journalists who are interested in expression and coverage of important topics, how should journalists treat the issue of neo-Nazism?
It's a difficult question. I mean, I think you should treat it from a historical angle. Where does this ideology come from? What has it done? What are they doing now? There is a lot to say about these people and what they're doing. You can talk about what they're saying, you can unpack it and discuss it amongst yourselves. But to bring up National Socialism in the idea of free speech and democracy is impossible, because it's an anti-democratic idea. When you bring up neo-Nazism, that dehumanizes people, because it's about genocide. So when you talk about these violent ideologies, you effectively silence certain groups of the population, and there is no way around that. So discuss it from an outsider's perspective is the only thing you can do, I think.
Is Nazism the only view you would want the media to not allow press or on its airwaves? Are there others? Where could you draw the line?
Of course, that's the difficult question. Where do you draw the line? And you need to be consistent with that. And no, we can't include everything. I think we should discuss controversial ideas. But Nazism is not controversial. It's pretty settled. So no, you can limit it to that. Nazism, fascist ideas, absolutely. But other things, it has to be a case-by-case basis, I guess.
Patrick, you went undercover in Seattle and elsewhere. Are you naming names, say, of Seattle area people who have kept their memberships and their Nazi views a secret?
No, we're not. Hope and Hate doesn't name and shame people unless they are really high up and organizes these things. So we name Greg Johnson because he organizes, he recruits, he radicalizes, and he spreads their propaganda. But we don't release names of every member and regular members and even pretty high members, unless they're actively contributing to spreading these ideas.
Well, why not do that as a way for them to be held accountable?
Well, it's not our job to name and shame people. We think that... wait, can I start over? So it's not our job to name and shame people who are only in the periphery of these groups by countering the whole idea and the groups themselves in a general sense. We hope that they get better ideas and change and do something else with their lives.
Patrick, from your year of going undercover, meeting and talking with white supremacists, what is your big takeaway? What do you want us to know?
We need to understand that these are old ideas that are still out there. People still believe in them. It didn't end with the Second World War, as we've just discussed. That's important to acknowledge. We need to understand how internationally connected they are. We need to understand how these organizations really work. They're very social. They organize barbecues. Like I've just been to one in Seattle. They function in a very social way, like all other political movements. And that makes it more difficult for people to leave once they're on the inside. And that's something we have to take into account when we work against them.
What did you learn about counteracting this ideology? What's the best way to neutralize it from what you found out?
So people that join these groups have varying backgrounds. Some are not very well off, have very poor social lives and poor support systems around them, while others are quite rich. But the majority, of course, tries to find simple solutions to things they find problematic in society. And I think schools and education systems have a big role to play there. We need to make people think about issues in society like healthcare, work, unemployment in a more structural way. But then second of all, in a more practical way of thinking of this, a more practical way to approach this that everybody could actually do now, is that we need to actively counter this. Yeah, that doesn't mean hitting a Nazi on the street like the example before. We shouldn't do that. But what we can do is to show everybody that's on the periphery, that these ideas are not okay. That these ideas are dangerous, they have been tested before, and it only leads to suffering. And we can do that by constantly saying no. So countering them in our personal life, And then in media, you ask a radio station, could put your foot down and just say, no, we're not letting this Nazi on. And in politics, in the same way, we're not letting them in. And that, in the long term, will make it very socially costly to become a Nazi, basically. Because what we saw in Charlottesville, for example, is that these people don't feel like it's a big deal. It's no big deal to show up without a face mask next to a swastika. So they're not afraid of repercussions of losing their jobs and so on. And they should be. I mean, it shouldn't be okay to have these ideas. They're not afraid of what their friends and family will think of them. And I would say that that's a problem. Because National Socialism or any other far-right idea, it's not just another opinion that we should discuss. It's not like being a Republican or a Democrat. It's beyond that. It's anti-democratic. Therefore, we as a society need to put our foot down.